Oh, you wait.
You've got a high bar.
Wait. Good evening. If I sound a bit sleepy, I just apologize. We had the great pleasure of attending a really wonderful wedding last night, and things just got a bit late, as they usually do. So I'm going to try and stay awake. That's an interesting musical accompaniment to start the show. Thank you. I tell the students you're allowed one jingle the whole semester, so that's it. One jingle and then you're out. So that's the deal. It usually happens, so it's not a problem. When it happens in shul, I'm not so happy. Shacharis is not so great. All right. Firstly, Erev Tov, with great trepidation, and I say this because of the people that we're actually going to be dealing with, we're beginning, after last week, when we got to know about the coronation of David and how it was not a coronation in the traditional sense, but it was such a magnificent gathering of people and the family with Shmuel and this wonderfully majestic figure who comes and anoints David, and to the surprise of everybody, to the amazement, Zaya Masa Hashem, and Hineflat Beineinu, we said it was so wondrous what was going on. That was last week, and of course now we've got a situation which is a very strange situation. We've got, on the one hand, you've got the real king, Shaul. He's not gone, he's still around. And you've got, I suppose, what we would call the king-elect. You've got the new king who's coming in, and not really known to anybody except to the immediate family and to Shmuel, who we said last week is pulling out and really seems to be totally affected in such a strong way by what happened. Now we're going to come to something which is a remarkable irony of history. The irony of history is, as I said, I approach this with trepidation. The irony of history is that these two very amazing characters have to, not be out of choice, let's say, but they really have to. It's like a necessity for the two characters to cross, Shaul and David. And what we're going to be dealing with essentially in the next couple of weeks is the interplay and the way that the characters sort of come together, the different sets of characters that we have to deal with. We'll have to deal with Shaul and David. We have to deal with, obviously, David and Yonatan, which is the very famous friendship that they have, and what an amazing guy Yonatan is, which we'll talk about. And again, we've got other players that rear their heads, ugly or otherwise. You've got Doeg Edomi, who's going to be around already today. And you've got other people. We're going to have David's relationship with Shaul in terms of marriage, in terms of marrying the daughters, Michal, or was it the other daughter? I've forgotten the name, and it comes up later on. And, you know, all of this discussion is really coming to terms with the characters in such a positive way, and sometimes in a very negative way. We have to come to terms with the fact Shaul is devastated at losing the kingship. And that's going to be something that we're already going to talk about this evening. And what we're going to actually try and deal with initially in terms of the relationship between Shaul and David is the concept of why it had to be that Shaul and David become linked, they become connected. You'll say to me, look, you know, it's kind of obvious, the king, the new king, the old king, but in terms of what we've got here, it's not quite so obvious. And the way that they come together, they're not related, there's no family connection, and yet there is such an intrinsic relationship which is built up so early between David and Shaul, it blows the mind. And it blows the mind for the obvious reason that David exhibits towards Shaul what I can only describe as unconditional, not just respect, but love. He loves this man. As much as Shaul will chase him and Shaul will drive him crazy and try and kill him and do the million and one things that Shaul does, David never, ever loses his respect, his love, his admiration for the first king of Israel. And that alone is just was worth coming out, even though it's so cold this evening, just to hear the concept of David's cover, the way he honors such an individual, even if he is at the point where of not just frustration, but more than that, exasperation. Where, as you'll see as the story develops, nevertheless, David never loses that respect, that sense of awe, that sense of honor that he has towards Shaul. It's very special. And we'll already begin to understand it, where it's coming from. And Mitzvah Hashem will develop some themes already this evening. If you're with me, we're on chapter, we're going to learn some psukim, which I always like to do. It's kind of part of the deal. We're learning chapter 16, Pasuk Yudalab, verse 14. And just tell me which page we're on. In the red book, it's easy. That's 134. That's the book that I've got. 134. Which one are we on in the blue book? That's really the book I need to hear from. Chapter 16, Tet Zayin, Pasuk Yudalab. 73. Page 73. That's the one that most people have. The other ones, you'll have to just sort of work it out. Listen to this, because this Pasuk is absolutely crucial. After we finish Pasuk Yud-Gimel, which was Shmuel going home, he's done his thing and he's gone. Pasuk Yud-Dalet says something which really resonates throughout the rest of the book of Shmuel. Shmuel Aleph. Okay? And this is something which we need to come to terms with, and we'll talk about it a lot more later on, but I already want to sort of introduce it. Pasuk says in Yud-Dalet 14, V'ruach Hashem sarah me'im Shaul. The Spirit of God went away from Saul. Ubi atatu ruach ra'ah me'et Hashem. And instead he had this evil spirit. You know, the language that is used in the Pasuk is something that's very hard to explain. If we have a psychologist or a psychiatrist in the audience, they will start talking about in terms of psychological diseases, in terms of depression. And I think we're going to all have to agree that Shaul gets very depressed. There's no question in my mind about that. But the big issue is going to be, is Shaul in fact crazy? Does he actually lose, as you would say, to quote the phrase, does he lose his marbles or does he not? And we're going to make a very strong case in due course that Shaul never ever loses his marbles. He's not crazy at all. I always remember somebody, my English teacher in school, telling me that King Lear was based on the character of King Saul. This is what I was told learning Shakespeare in England. And I'm not convinced. You know, now thinking about it, sort of 40 years later, had I known now what I knew then sort of thing, I would have stood up and said something. At the time, it sounded like a good comparison, but I'm not sure if it's true. King Lear seemingly is kind of nuts. This guy isn't. Yes.
Pashup Shad, it's not that it's a disease. It says Me'im
Hashem. Yeah, yeah.
God
it was God's sin. That he has a Ruach Ra. But the question is, what exactly is going on here? What this Ruach Ra really is something we're going to come to terms with later on. I can't deal with it now, but I'm introducing the point because it really filters through the whole story. Yeah.
Just notice that if you put that one sentence,
yeah.
If you read that verse, it says, Ruach Hashem El Davi, Nehan.
Correct, exactly.
It's so obvious that it went from Shaul, you know, and the way the sentences are almost juxtaposed.
Correct, correct.
Went from Shaul.
Correct,
to David.
Correct. And that is the key to this evening's whole presentation. Okay, you actually summed it up in one sentence, and that's brilliant. But we don't have to go home yet because I've got to explain it. It's absolutely crucial what you just said, and it really makes the whole shiur. The concept of David now is essentially, David is the only person who can really understand what Shaul is feeling. Because David is the only one who is experiencing now what Shaul experienced, because remember, he had this tremendous uplift of kingship and the prophecy and everything else, and that's all gone. So who understands him? The only person who can possibly understand him is the guy who gets it, is now David. So David, and this is going to be the whole key to this evening's shir, but in due course, but it's excellent. You've pointed that out, and that's great. Yes?
In Yechezkel, it says that...
Oh, this is wonderful. Quoting Yechezkel, you scared the life out of me. Sorry, go on. Sorry?
They say that God gave birth to Yechezkel, and they quote this.
Really? Oh my goodness. I don't know what to say to you. I stand in awe of anyone who quotes Yechezkel. That's fabulous. I'm not sure. We'll have to talk about it afterwards. We'll talk about it afterwards. Good teacher shtick, right? Come back at the end of the lesson. We'll talk about it. All right. We'll go on. And as I said, this Ruach business is something that we'll come to terms with in due course. Pasuk Tet Vav, Yom Rav Dei Shaul Elav. So of course Shaul is depressed. So what's going to happen? So his servant said, you know what? You've got a bad spirit. Mainly, basically, you're down, and we've got to pick you up again. So we're going to suggest Yevakshu ish yodeh menagen b'chino. We've got to look for somebody who can play the harp or whatever it is. We know that David was very good, apart from looking after the sheep, and apart from writing Tehillim, which is most of the Tehillim were written at that time. He seems to have been self-taught when it comes to playing the harp, which is pretty amazing. Ura hanevo v'chino, you know, the famous pasuk, that he wakes up, the harp woke him up every night, the Gemara says, to study. You know, he woke up at midnight to study Torah. It's unbelievable stories about David the Manor. Anyway, v'haya biyot alecha racha lekim ra'a. So when you have this attack of depression or whatever, v'nigein biyot ova tovlach, he'll play and it will be good. But we don't know who's going to play. We need to find a musician. Who is it going to be? So look at what Shaul's response is. V'yomer Shaul el Avadav, Runali ish meitiv lenagen, find somebody who can play well, v'aviotim elai, bring him to me. Now, here comes something interesting. V'ayan echad me'anarim. I want to hear what you think. Is this guy, as it were, coming in now to add to the conversation? Or, let's put it very bluntly, to politicize the conversation. Listen to this. V'ayan echad me'anarim. So one of the lads, we're not told who it is, he says, v'ayomer, hinei ra'iti ben li'ishai. I know that Yishai has a son, Beit Alachmi from Beit Lechem, right, that's where he lives. Yodea Nagein, he knows how to play. But look what he adds. V'gibo Chayo, he's a shtark, he's a strong guy. Ish Milchama, he's a man of war. Unavon Davar, he's very smart. V'ish Toa, and he looks the part. V'ashem Imon, God is with him. Now again, is this extra information really necessary? And what does this extra information do? Or what is the agenda of the person who is offering this extra information? If he said, I knew there was a son to Ben Yishai who plays the instrument well, fine. That's what you want, that's what Shaul wants, and that's what you should have said. He gives a whole bunch of additional descriptions over here, all of which seem to have a purpose. Now you could say that this guy is just saying, this guy, you know, David is unbelievable. He's so amazing, and he's amazing, and he's more amazing, and even more amazing. Look at Rashi, and Rashi immediately points out something very interesting. Echa me'anarim, Rashi on Yud Chet, he says, Miyuchad Shebem, who was the lad who spoke? Do'eg o'edomi. Now he's a guy we're going to really have to come to terms with in very short period of time. He is, let's put it very bluntly, the agent provocateur of the whole story. He really puts in his opinion, and he's got it in for David in a big way. And it's not very clear why. We'll have to try and understand why. Look what he says here. Yodea nage, kol atzmo nitkaven lachnis ayin ra'a, Rashi says. What is Doeg's agenda here? To bring a bad eye, shel Sha'ol, of Sha'ol, but David sheit kanebo. That Sha'ol should be jealous with David. This is a political agenda here. It's phenomenal. I wouldn't have read it like that, but Rashi allows me to read it like that. So already within the framework of the new political situation, with the old king and the new king, we've got this guy Doeg who's coming in and making trouble. He's offering the knowledge that there is somebody who can play the instrument, can play the music, but at the same time, this is a guy who is really greater and greater. Sounds a bit like sort of what we've been listening to for the last sort of 2.5 years. You know, he's a candidate who is so great, nothing can beat him. And the reality is that, you know, there is maybe a bit of a political agenda. Not maybe, Rashi says, a major political agenda. Again, these are themes which we're going to come back to, we're going to talk about, but I want to introduce them already. It's very important to remember who we're dealing with. We've got David, we've got Shaul, and now a third character we have to know, Doeg. Who he is, what he is, as I said, we'll come back to in due course. All of these themes are coming together. Now you see quite amazingly that David and Shaul are going to get linked through music. And I just want to add one very short sort of thought about this, because it's something that's mentioned in the Chovot al-Avavot. Bachi ibn Bakuda, one of the famous philosophers of Spain, he writes about Chochmata Musica. He talks about Chochmata Torah, and he says that the just slightly lower in terms of wisdom is the wisdom of music. And he talks about the therapy of music and how it comforts you and whatever. Phenomenal. I mean, all of us, you know, when you put on that piece of music and you get home after a hard day, it's one of those things that can really sort of ease the pain or whatever it is. I like the fact that now you go to the dentist, they can even soothe the pain, supposedly, all right, by putting these earphones on, and then, you know, you're supposed to be in seventh heaven while he's you know, doing what he's doing. Maybe music works for some. It doesn't work for me at the dentist, I have to say. But whatever it is, it's one of those things that is recognized, music therapy. And here we've got it right in the earliest days of Jewish history. They're basically looking for the therapy. Now, look at this. I just want to finish the chapter, and I want to share with you this piece that we have, which is phenomenal. Pasuk Yutet, Vayishlach Shaul Malachim al Yishai, Vayomesh Shilchai Lai David bin Chashe Batzon. We know David is out with the sheep. Send him to us. Vayikach Yishai Chamor Lechem. No, the iron. So Yishai gives him, you know, he's a nice Jewish kid, so he's got to have a lot of food. Bring food with. He's got a donkey full of bread and wine, ugedizim and meat. Echad, you know, take an animal with you. Vayishlach biyad David beno el Shaul. And he sent him to Shaul. One suggests also to bring a present to the king. It's one of the things you do. Vayavo David el Shaul vayamod lefanah. He stood before Shaul. And here comes the posse again, which knocks my socks off. Vayehaveu ma'od. Not that he loved him, but he loved him exceedingly. And the question is, who's loving who? All right? It could be David to Shaul, I would suggest, but it could also be Shaul to David in the sense that he sees what David represents and the way he plays, and he's just enamored with him. And of course, David became his weapon bearer, which is about as close as you get. You know, nowadays you would say the Rebbe's Shamus, right? This is what he became. And Shaul sends a message to Yishai to say, Yamod no David lefanayki matsa. Chain Beinai, he's fabulous. David should stay with me. So when he gets depressed, David takes his fiddle or he takes his harp. Vinigain biyado, plays the music. Verevach leShaul v'tovlo, it gives Shaul a bit of quiet, a bit of solitude, a bit of peace, inner peace. V'sarame olav rucha ra'a, and his depression goes away. Okay, and there's again a lot of stuff going on even nowadays about the whole use of music in therapy. It's a phenomenal thing. What is going on here? You know, I mean, again, the fact is we've got David and Shaul coming together. Really, it's so strange. As I said, such an irony. What is really happening? And let me share this with you. This is phenomenal. Again, if I can ask you just to pass this around. As I said last week, we're going to be delving into the writings of really one of the great Bible teachers of this generation, who passed away in 1996, somebody called Yeshua Bachrach, who I heard Shiurim, I heard in the 80s, and again, in the style of Nechama Leavitt, in the style of that sort of teaching, and again, even with that introduction, he had his own special quality of novelty, chidush. And look at the page that you have in front of you, and you'll see that he asked the basic question, what's going on here? Why does David and Shaul, why do they have to come together in this way? Not that they're choosing to be together, but it's like it's being engineered, it's being created by Hashem. Listen to this, because this is fabulous. He says, he gives you two approaches. One approach, he says, is Kabbalistic, and he apologizes for it, but he says, I've just got to share this with you, and we'll do a bit of it, even if I don't understand a word I'm saying, but we'll try. And the second approach, which is essentially what Michael said before, we're going to elaborate in more detail. Why David had to be the person who now connects with Shaul in this particular situation. It's really unbelievable. Look at the page in front of you in section A, and this is fabulous. He says like this. He says, "Lo lechinam asa kacha katub." The fact that David and Shaul come together is not really lechinam. It's not for no reason at all. Ki ratza bezel leshalev et shtei ahavot. Basically, what's happening is there's two loves going on here. Sha'avu zed zeh shnei mashichei Hashem. That the two anointed ones of God, as it were, loved each other. They had this affection for each other in the sense of respect and unconditional admiration for each other. Harishonim lemalchut Yisrael, the first two kings of Israel. Now listen to this. Ki lo lechinam zimein HaKadosh Baruch Hu David im Shaul. This is not by chance, it's not a coincidence that David and Shaul come together. Ela kedei sheyeshvu shneihem yachdam. They should sit together, one opposite the other. Zeh mul zeh, one facing the other. V'yishavu zeh mizeh shavtim mayim b'sasoh. You should draw from each other. Halichot malchut b'kodesh. How to run the kingdom in holiness. Hanimshachot aleihem mikete elyon. Comes from the highest crown of God. This is where it gets into language that I can only just about translate, but I can't explain. Zu hasvira rishona. Lamala le eses svirat blima. Very quick, a lesson in Kabbalistic language, which will last approximately 2 minutes, because that's about all I know. I've got to go to one of these Kabbalah centers, I suppose, and find out. But the reality is like this. What you have is what is called Sfirot. In Kabbalistic explanation of the way the world functions in our relationship to God, you have Sfirot, which I've always been told to translate as emanations of God. Now, with the translation, it doesn't really help me very much. So I don't know what it is. But it's something which comes from God into the world, and there are lower emanations and higher emanations. Whatever, again, whatever that means. So what are those of you who say the tefillah during Sfirat HaOmer, when you have the tefillah at the end, the Kabbalistic prayer at the end after the Sfirah, where it talks about the different combinations of Chesed b'Chesed, Chesed b'Malchut, this is referring to all these various emanations which are, as it were, coming together on different days of the Omer. All right, so far, if I've been talking gibberish, please excuse me, because I'm not quite sure what I'm saying. I hope it makes some sort of, at least it may sound good. I'm not sure really what it means. What we're doing is essentially here going to suggest that Kabbalistically, this is the first suggestion, Kabbalistically, David had to link up with Shaul. He says Shaul represents the emanation of God known as Yesod, the foundation, the fundamental foundation, as it were, of the kingship of Israel. David, he says, represents Malchut, with the highest level of the emanation from God. The highest emanation is Malchut. In order to achieve Malchut, it's like building a house. You need foundations. Without foundations, it's not going to stand. So Shaul is the foundation of the house, and David becomes, as it were, the palace on which the house stands, on which foundation it stands, meaning it's got to stand on the foundation of Shaul for the palace, for David to, as it were, function. Without connecting to Shaul, Kabbalistically, he wants to suggest it's never going to work. Wow. Again, this is, please excuse me, because I'm not quite sure what I'm saying, but listen to this. It's the continuation. Ketiv, it says in Divrei Yomim, possibly we say every day, L'cha Hashem ha-gedula, ha-gvura, ha-tiferet, ha-netzev, va-hod, ki kol ba-shamayim va-ares, l'cha Hashem ha-mlacha, ha-mitnasei l'chol ha-rosh. Right? We say that in Vayivarech David every single day. What is that all about? Believe it or not, Taninon b'sefer Yetzira l'Avraham Avinu alav Hashalom. Now, if you want to spend a couple of hours reading something which will literally not make any sense to you whatsoever, there is not only in Hebrew, but in the translation, Aryeh Kaplan, who was this wonderful writer who died so young, 48 years old. He was working in NCSY, and he was a very, very amazing writer who passed away many years ago already. Did a translation of Sefer Yetzirah. Sefer Yetzirah is a Kabbalistic book which is attributed to Avraham Avinu. Don't ask me why or how or when or anything about it, because I really don't know. But as I said, if you want to spend a couple of hours, as they say, blissfully looking at this book and trying to sort of work out what it's all about, there's even a translation. It probably won't help you very much. It's very, very difficult to read. But listen to this. Quoting from Sefer Yetzirah, Eses Sefirah, same. There are 10 emanations, 10 spheres, literally the word. There's Keter Chochmah. Now those of you who go to Tanya Shirim will be comfortable with this. Keter Chochmah, Bina, Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchut. Now again, I'm not even going to begin to translate any of this. Look at the language here. This is the action of the fingers of God. And these are his kalim, his vessels that he has as part of his umanud, as part of his work of what God does. I don't know what I'm saying. Listen to this. Ketezu svira rishona b'mala. The crown is the highest, as it were, of the emanations of God. Kihu oda devuka be'en sov. It's something which is still connected to God, like the crown is on the head of the king. It's connected to Hashem. Shehu tachlit ha-lama. Whatever that means, I'm not quite sure what that means. It's the purpose of God's being hidden. Ve'ele shalachareo yordot darga daga. All the other emanations go down stage by stage. Umitra chakot me'alama. And go further away from that hidden presence of God. Kedei lagia elet galut. Becoming more and more revealed. Don't ask me what this is talking about. I really don't know. Shekol ma sha'or lamato hu nikar v'nirgash yoter mitgalesh. As the light comes down into this world, it becomes more revealed. This is what it's saying. Again, I really don't know what it means. But listen to this. Tachlit et galut hi besvirat amalchut. The whole purpose of the revelation of God is to understand the kingship of God. This obviously links into Rosh Hashanah and the themes of Melech, etc. Amalchut nikret sufa or sofa de machshava. The end of the thought process of God is represented by Malchut. What I've said in the last 5 minutes, as I said, I'm really not sure what I'm talking about, but listen to what Rav Bachra says. He says the following. Shtei Sfirot Achronot Yisod Malchut. The last two emanations are the Yisod, the foundation, and Malchut, kingship. And this is one explanation of why David and Shaul come together. It blows the mind. Kishurot hein zu lezu. They are connected one to the other. Hayisod nikra kol. The foundation is called kol, or everything. All right? Ki kol bashamayim v'aris. That's the pasuk. Everything in heaven and earth is based on the foundation. Okay? Ki hu amachil et kol ma shekibel me'asfira shekadmula. It receives everything from the previous emanation. This is the foundation. V'hu amichin u'mechaven et amalchut. And it gives direction to the kingdom, to the kingship. L'cha Hashem ha-melacha, to God is kingship. Ha-ra malchut eina la mehara yisod. The light of kingship comes from the light of yisod. All of this is wonderful. I'm not sure remotely what I'm talking about, but listen to this. Sha'ul hu misvirat ha-yisod. Sha'ul is the yisod, the foundation. David hu misvirat ha-malchut. David is Malchus. David is kingship. So what the suggestion is, Kabbalistically, and it's the only way I can explain this without getting into all this language, is to say that David and Shaul had to come together because David basically could not become the king that he became without the foundation of Shaul. So they had to link, they had to come together. David and Shaul had to spend time together, not only listening to David playing music and comforting Shaul, but what did they do when Shaul was okay? They talked about kingship, they talked about the challenges, the problems, etc. And this is one of the explanations, really not an easy explanation, I must say, of why David and Shaul had to really be together. If you're happy with that, fine. I'm not too comfortable with this because I really don't understand it. But I throw it in there because this is what Bachrach used to do. He used to come out with this sort of Kabbalistic stuff and blew your mind. Yes.
So at this point, there's no jealousy or envy from Shaul to David?
Nothing at all. That starts...
But doesn't he realize that David has got the calling?
No, not yet. Not yet. That comes in chapter 17. That's the whole real fundamental issue of Perek Yuzayin with David and Goliath, that by fighting Goliath the way he does, you know, he leaves all his weapons at home, right? He takes with a pencil sharpener. That's basically what he's taking with. You know, leave everything else at home. Basically, what happens is that becomes very clear to Shaul, this is the new guy.
He never got the intelligence that
Not till now. Not from Shaul's end, but David knows. David knows, and this is what we're going to say now. And this is what is so precious. Listen to this. And this is what Michael said before. Baruch Shekivanti, you really come up with something beautiful here. Listen to section B. And he says, look, I'm going to give you a more simple explanation, but listen to the way it works. He says, "Hein hu asher tzalcha alav ruach Hashem, mayom ahu v'mala." David is the one who got the new spirit of God. Lachein rak hu hayodea. He's the only one who knows. Ma chaselo l'Shaul min hayom ahu, what Shaul is missing. Exactly what Michael said. Kasher sara me'alav ruach Hashem, when he lost the ruach Hashem. Whatever it was, as I said, I tried to explain already, I think we've already said this, in terms of having the greatest sense of revelation, of uplift. I can't begin to put it into any sort of experience that we can remotely relate to. I just don't know. You know, for some people, the first time that, I don't know, you see your first child, or, you know, some incredible experience that you have, which is so amazing. It's just something that is beyond words. It's very hard to explain. But this is what's going on here. Shaul had this uplift, which is now gone. He's got a vacuum there. He's got an enormous space which he just can't fill. It gets filled with ruach ra'ah. It gets filled with this sense of depression, with this sense of feeling so bad and feeling so down and whatever it is. And David knows what he's doing, knows what he's missing, because David's got it. David is now on cloud nine because he is now connecting to God in such a spiritual way. Listen to this. We're going to say a bit more than that. Yes. Correct. Correct.
The last week before Shavuos is the week of Malchus.
It's the week of Malchus, exactly.
The day before.
You say the tefillah. Good for you, because I stopped saying a long time ago.
Yeah.
because I never understood it.
The last day before Shavuot
is
not only Malchus, but it's Malchus Sheba.
Sheba Malchus. There you go. And that's exactly
that whole week.
And that's exactly the whole thing. You like the Kabbalistic shtick. I can see you liked it, but I'm not sure even if I remotely understand it. But great, you know. It's one of those things that I understand the idea of a foundation and something being built. You know, from sort of studying building construction. But that's your Hasidic side. Great. If you're comfortable with that, listen to this. Listen to what he calls Beishora Pashut. What is so in the simple explanation? Listen to this. This for Rabachach was simple. Wow, he's going to say the following, and it really is precious. Again, we're saying that David understands what Shaul is missing. Al Kain, sorry, it's now four lines into that paragraph. Al Kain hayad David merachameu biahava. David had such feelings of rachmonas, of sense of loving this man and feeling so bad for him. Ubeshivto kom vimulo, when he was sitting opposite him. And the biroto to near ad v'nivat, and he saw that Shaul was shaking, and Shaul was going through this terrible sense of you know, sort of physically he was exhibiting all these signs. But otzvo, because he was so sad, hayad David memaher v'lokech kinom menagen. David would take his harp and he would start playing. Ki'ilu hayam margish et atzmo asher. He felt that I'm guilty for what this man is going through. David is, and you know, you say to yourself, wow, this is already showing signs of character that is mind-blowing. Al-zeh asher nilkach mi-Shaul mi-Tanlo. David will say, I'm to blame that Shaul lost it, and I've got it. Of course, it had nothing to do with David. It was Shaul's loss because of what he incurred on his own account. But it doesn't matter. David was such a tzaddik, such a righteous individual. He felt responsible for Shaul. He felt guilty for Shaul. And this is amazing. Al kein haya mishtadel b'chon imei nasho. He would try with everything of his soul lashiv lo ad ruach Hashem atovah lav, to bring some sort of good spirit back to Shaul. And that is the key to the whole story. Now listen to this. He quotes it from Alshik. He quotes from different Beforeshim. It's fabulous. Al yidei zeh yitaron hakedusha sherel David. Because David had this extra holiness now, which became upon him, mitorer ruach Hashem litpashet b'Shaul, a bit of it bounced off onto Shaul. It spread out, and that's what it is. Sometimes you're in the confines of holy people, you feel it. I never had the zechus, I have to say, to be what they called yechidus with the Rebbe, with the Bavitcher Rebbe. But my friends, a lot of my friends in England, when they came to America, they did. And they said there was something very timeless about the experience. They might have sat with him for 2 or 3 minutes. And maybe somebody in the room here did, I don't know. But it was the room, it was just something that, it was a mamal, they've said a mamal minatev. It was like a very strange sense, a very unusual sense, very, very special sort of connection that you would feel with this man. And it was very, it was just something that this sentiment here reminds me of. The idea that when you connect with somebody who is of a different spiritual dimension, the sense of Kedusha sort of spills over. I once went to see Rav Scheinberg, Shbi Gezun. He's 94 years old. He's an interesting character. He was born and bred in the United States. We'll talk about Babe Ruth sort of from first-hand experience. Apparently, actually, either he knew him or he certainly went to see him. If that's possible, I suppose if you're 94, you could have seen Babe Ruth. You help me out here. But the reality is that he's a man who sits all day with talis and tefillin, but not just one talis. Maybe you've heard about him. He wears 18 talitot, 18 tzitziot, small tzitzit underneath his shirt, well over his shirt, and then 18 talitot, and the biggest fan in front of him you've ever seen in your life. He's sitting in Yerushalayim. To keep cool, he's got to have the air blowing on him the whole time. He's a remarkable individual. He comes out to the States. He's got obviously a lot of family here. And when he's around, if he's not wearing his normal tefillin, he has very small tefillin, which he wears under his hat. He's literally the whole day is wearing tefillin. Remarkable man. The story goes with him, and we sat with him for 2 or 3 hours at the time. And again, you felt something very special, especially when he's trying to eat his chicken soup with a tefillin on. It's very difficult to do. He was kind of long distance with the spoon. It was quite interesting to watch. But apart from that, it was my wife will tell you more about that story. It's a funny story. But the reality was that there's something very unique about these guys. And again, I didn't ask him. And I'm sorry I didn't ask him. But apparently, this wearing of the chai, you know, it's obviously something to do with chai. He wears 18 of all these things. Is to do with, I think, one of his daughters was sick or something like that. And he took upon himself presumably from a Kabbalistic perspective, somebody advised him to do this, and he's done it ever since. He's worn all of these talitot and tzitziot. Again, whether it's true or not, he was in an accident, a car accident not a long time ago, wearing all this stuff with one of those old-fashioned cars where the springs are real springs, and apparently the tzitziot saved his life because the spring came out of the back of the car, of the seat in front of him, pierced obviously through his jacket, but because he was wearing all this heavy stuff, it didn't actually affect him. It didn't scratch him, and that's the story that I was told. If it's for true, if it's for real, then it's an amazing story. If not, then it's a good story to tell anyway. The reality is, I've got to ask him if he ever comes. He does come now less and less to America, but he is seen here from time to time as a remarkable individual. So again, you feel that the presence of these people really, really sort of has its effect on you when you're with them. I remember sitting at my Rosh Hashiva in England, Reb Gurevitch, who was really a very great man, and really very special, special to talk to them, special to hear their points of view of the world, how they function, what they thought, who they were. It says about David that when you looked at him, it was like looking at the sun. You couldn't even look at the man. He was just radiating Kedusha. That's the rabbinic interpretation. But I guess there were times when, you know, sort of you could switch it, you could sort of near the dimmer switch, you could dim it down a bit as well, as we'll see later on. But listen to this, the third line, taken from the Abar Manah. And these are all mainstream commentaries that they're talking about here. David had a special car. Hu inyan eloki. It's from God. When it says, he would play music, and it will be great. This is like, you know, listening to one of the sort of greats in Carnegie Hall or in London, you know, just to go to the Albert Hall there, and you hear sort of a great pianist. It really is something special. Ki haya ha-koach hazeh miuchad liyad David, very special koach for David. V'zeh hora shekavah haya alav shef eloki, and this came from his godly influence that he had. Liyot David na'im zimirot Yisrael, he was the singer of Israel. And his song was pleasant to God. Okay, that's something that we're going to talk about. Here comes something to think about every time you say this. We say it when we put the Sefer Torah away. L'David mizmor, and we sometimes say mizmor l'David. What's the difference? So listen to this from the Gemara. L'David mizmor melameid sheshata alav shechina. David mizmor means that the Shechina came upon him. And then he's saying the song, when we put the Sefer Torah away during the week. And then, Mizmor LaDavid means, Melameid Sha'amar Shira, he would first sing his song, then the Shekhinah would come upon him, Mizmor LaDavid, Hovel Hashem B'nei Elim, David sang it, and then as a result of singing those incredible words and ideas and thoughts and whatever, it all came upon him, the Spirit of God. Wow. Now listen to this. If we understand now what's going on, that David is the only one who can comfort Shaul, what would he have said or what would he have played to Shaul at this particular time? And here is something fabulous. This is where you're beginning to come to terms with Tehillim. When you look at Sefer Tehillim, you're looking at the soul. I'm not just saying the presence in the physical sense, but the spiritual sense, the soul of David HaMelech. David is somebody that we're going to have to come to realize he wears his emotions literally on his sleeve. Everything about this guy is up front. There is nothing hidden. If he's sad, he's sad. If he's angry, he's angry. If he's passionate, he sees Bathsheba, he's after. This is a guy who's something else. And again, when we get to that story, we'll have to explain what exactly he was after, but it's a strange story. But this is a guy who's, I don't know, the most passionate, the most emotional person you've ever met. Okay, I don't quite know, even if remotely we can ever sort of describe such a person like this, if we've met such a person, I don't know. Somebody who's so passionate, so keen, so determined, everything about him. And listen to this, the suggestion of what David is doing here. Mahaya David menagein alei kinaros. So we're going to look in the Sefer Tehillim to try and find out, what did David play to Shaul? What was he playing? What did he sing to him? Maybe he sang to him songs of salvation. Shaul is scared. He's frightened. He's lost that spirit of God. He's got to go and fight wars. How's he going to do it? He's shaking. We'll see in the next chapter with Goliath. Goliath rattles his saber at him, and Shaul is shaking. He says his knees are shaking. Everything about him is shaking. He can't handle it. So what would David do at that moment? He'll play for him something of encouragement, of salvation, that they're going to win. bitachon, something to trust, something to, you know, that it's going to be turn out good. That he took from his own soul. So he quotes from Tehillim Mem Gimel. I will come to the Lord. I will praise you with the kino, with my violin or whatever it is. Elokim Elokai, my God. Ma tishtoch achi nafshi, ma temi olai, ochili lelokim, ki od odeno Yeshua tashem panai velokai. Basically, I'm praising and I'm bowing my soul to God because I'm looking for the salvation of God in the battle, in whatever's going to happen to him. And this, of course, is very, very special. Thank you. And it's again, maybe that's what he played to. We don't really know. And there's another suggestion here. There's another suggestion. And this other suggestion is also fabulous. He says, O Olai, not about salvation, Havi lo bekinoro meirecha sadeh umid midbaro shirei mechavia. Right? Maybe he brought him songs which would give this awareness of God in the widest sense. Uteshua mishirei hakosev asuin leshachred adam mikivlei amitzar. Very hard to translate all this. He's basically trying to release the man from the bonds of being mitzar, mitzarim, being limited. Mitzorat ayin, from his terrible problem that he's so affected by everything around him. Mitzorat lev, and his heart feels so troubled. Ki bahem mitmalei halev ach orgal elyon. His heart is full, but it's bound up. It's not free. Lachazob benoam Hashem levakeh beicholo, and he wants to see the beauty of Hashem. So what would David sing to him? Elokim keli ata shacharecha. Oh my God, I am looking towards you. Tzama alecha nafshi. The Rebbe used to sing this. Tzama alecha nafshi, kam alecha basari. My soul is thirsty for you. My flesh is desirous of you, as it were. Be'eretz si ve'ayipli maim. I'm in a desert without water. Kein ba'kodesh chaziticha. So I will see you in a holy place. Liros uzchav chodecha, to see your honor, your strength, and your honor. This is something, again, from the Tehillim, which maybe David made, not only made the words, wrote the lyrics, as they say nowadays, but he also made up the tune, and who knows what else. And listen again to what the Rambam says, how the Rambam talks about this pasuk. This is Rambam from Hilchos Sodei HaTorah. This whole piece is just amazing. He says, V'heichi aderech la'avoto v'yirato. How do you come to fear and love God? B'sha'ah sheyitbonein ha'adam b'masav v'baruah v'niflaim. Just go and spend a few hours at a place to sit, to look at the stars, look through a telescope, and you'll see incredible things. Or maybe even to spend time on a boat in the river. You know, you see, again, you come to terms with nature, you come to terms with the greatness of God without having to sort of negotiate the George Washington Bridge and all that sort of stuff. You get away from all of that stuff. It's the way to really do it. And he says, V'yira mehem hachmato, and you'll see the wisdom, she'ein lo erech v'lo ketz, there's no limit to Hashem in terms of understanding or whatever. This happened to me when I was in the army. I did basic training in Israel, and one of the things they do, they send you out in the middle of the night. In the middle of nowhere, it's like what they used to do at camp, but this is much worse in a way. You're in the middle of a field, who knows how many people are around you, and, you know, get back to the army base. And you have to use the stars. And for the first time I can ever say, you know, when I looked and saw the stars that you see, when you're in the middle of nowhere with no artificial lights, it's just mind-blowing. And again, sometimes this happens during the summer if you go to camp or you're in a place like that. You know, it's all around you. You've just got to see it. You've just got to experience it. And it's very special. You know, we're just, unfortunately, we spoil ourselves a bit by sort of blocking out all of these incredible things that we could see. And he says this, Rambam says it. The second line there, Miyadu ohev ha-mashabeah. In other words, the more that you delve into the knowledge of God, the more you want to come to know God. And he goes on and on and on with this, and he brings this pasuk, and he says, this is the pasuk, the fourth line, underlined, Samalacha, Sama nafshi lelukim nekel chai. My soul is, as it were, thirsty to know God. When you think about these things, you become fearful, and you know, shehu briaktana, you know, you realize how small you are and how big the world around you really is. And that's something very special. And of course, at the bottom, the last couple of lines, the last four lines, this is the point that he's making. Ki yodea hayad David knew. Ed nefesh Shaul, he understood not just the character of Saul, he understood his soul. It's fabulous. But gam libo atzmo haya malei cherda. He knew charada. He knew that his heart was filled with fear. Utafilah alatid, and not only fear, but prayer for the future. Saul did not know. Shaul did not know what's going to be. He realized now he's out of favor with God, and he's going to start getting desperate because he has battles to fight for the sake of the Jewish people. What's going to happen? Lehitrachesh b'neim. What's going to happen between them? Al kein hayamosif alav rachamim. The more that David saw this, the more that he felt mercy. He felt empathy and everything else towards him. Kikol sha'ash ayir shev. The more he saw Saul in such pain, he felt so much a feeling towards him that he had to alleviate that pain. That's why he played the music. Wow. And again, even look at it without the Kabbalistic introduction, the whole concept that David is the only one, as Michael said it, to know the soul of Shaul, what Shaul had, and what he now has lost. And who can bring that comfort to Shaul? One person. David is the only one who can do it through playing and through discussing and maybe saying the Tehillim. It gives you some idea what's going on here, by the way, in terms of Tehillim. This is not something that was written in one day. This is something that, you know, David was out in the field for 28 years. We learned that last week. And in those 28 years, one guessed, not all the 28 years, one assumes he was out there, let's say 10 years. But in those 10 years, apart from looking after the sheep, you know, when there's downtime, which I reckon is probably most of the day, he probably had little, parchment with him, and he was writing all these phenomenal things of Tehillim. Now, did he write the whole Tehillim? That's a whole discussion, which is not for now. But I just recommend to you the introduction of the Ibn Ezra. He basically argues so strongly that to say David wrote the whole Tehillim just doesn't work. It's obviously there are different people who put it all together. When it was actually finally put together and compiled is a whole big discussion unto itself. But whatever you say, majority of Tehillim come from David. Le David Mizmor, Mizmor Le David. Now that again, you know, one understands the difference between those two introductions and the whole concept of what David is doing. This is unreal, that even though, and now it's not so critical, but later on, when Shaul is chasing him, we know that he throws a spear at him, and we know that he does this a number of times, and we know that he's out to get him, and he brings thousands of soldiers chasing after David. And through all of this, David stays so faithful to him. I just want to show you one pasuk, which really almost makes me cry every time I read it. It's chapter 24, the famous story of En Gedi. And the language that happens here, when what happens very simply is that this is where Shaul basically disappears into the cave, and he uses the cave as a bathroom. It's a sort of famous story over there. And David is in there hiding, and he sees the king, and he cuts off the corner of his cloak, and he holds it up afterwards, and he says to the king, he comes out to his men and he's showing them what he got from Shaul. Pasuk Vav. Vayach Rechem, Vayach Leif David Oto. David was upset. Ala Sheh Karat Et Kanaf Asher LeShaul, because he cut off the cloak. It was an act of disrespect. And of course, all his men say to him, what are you talking about? Vayom Al Anashav Chalilim Hashem. The men said to him, go and kill him. He's after you. He's a rodev. You can kill him first. Kill the king. And he says, what do you mean? God forbid I should remotely kill the Mashiach Hashem. What are you talking about? Says David. Lishlach yadibo. I'm going to stretch out my hand against him. Ki Mashiach Hashem, who is the anointed one of God. How can I remotely go near him except in a sense of awe? And he's so upset that he cut the cloak of the king. And Chazal say, this is why, at the beginning of the book of Kings, Sefer Malachim, he's cold. Why does he get so cold? Because he realizes this is the punishment for what he did over here. He did not respect Shaul the way he should have done, and he cut off the corner of his cloak, and that caused a midah keneged midah, measure for measure, and he became cold himself, and he needed Abishag over there to warm him up. And that's a whole story by itself. All of this, you go on, look through chapter 24, 25, 26, particularly 24 and 26, you'll see the language of David to the point where Shaul hears him and hears him call out. And he says to Shaul at one point, I could have killed you, but I don't because I respect you, I love you so much. And Shaul turns around and says to him, Bani, David, Bani, you're like my son, you're like my family, you're like the closest thing I have. And that really is the seal of the whole story. And at that point, Shaul goes his way and David goes his way. We're dealing here, as I said at the beginning of this year, with
unbelievable individuals. We're dealing with a Shaul who, even at his darkest moment, has a quality of what the word is in Yiddish, stolz. What is that? Pride, right? It's more than pride. It's more. He's got this. He's able. He's such a refined person. Even in his darkest moments, there is a refined. A fine character about this man. And on top of that, you've got David, who can only be described as the most amazing individual you're ever going to learn about from all angles. If you thought you knew about him, and we all think we know something about it, after we finish this particular learning, and it's all in the Psukim here, it's a wow. For next week, what I would ask you to do, because it's such a famous story, maybe some of you have even been to Emek Ha'Ela, you've been there, you've done the trip, read through chapter 17. It's a long chapter, 57 Psukim, 58 Psukim. It's going to take us a couple of weeks to get through. But what we will try and deal with is coming to terms to understand initially the story, David and Goliath, what's going on there, the weirdest war you've ever come across in your life, one against one, and then, you know, what sort of deal is that? It's a very strange deal that they make. What is Goliath all about? What is David all about? Think about one thing. Who is Goliath? The great, whatever, grandson of Orpah. Who was Orpah? The sister of Ruth. Who is David? The great, great, the great grandson of Ruth. So there is something here which is very strange. You've got Orpah going her way, and you've got Ruth going her way, and then come down a couple of generations, and look, lo and behold, David's over here, and Goliath is over here, and they're coming together again. Something very strange going on here. We'll talk about that, Mirzah Hashem, next week. To be continued. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.